On today's episode of Locked On Oilers, we are going to look at the Oilers' current cap situation and see what they can do to wiggle some cap space out of the summer. Plus, we are also going to take a look at the Edmonton Oilers' rivals of this season and where we think the Pacific Division will finish off at the end of the season. All that and much more on today's episode of Locked On Oilers.
Your Locked On Oilers, your daily podcast on the Edmonton Oilers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome back to the Locked On Oilers podcast. I am your host and former Oilers game day producer, Brett Holden. As mentioned on today's episode, we are going to go through, somebody asked me what I think will happen with the Edmonton Oilers cap situation, so I'm going to outline it here today with the Edmonton Oilers cap situation and what I think the Oilers could do to slip in a couple extra names. Plus, we are also going to go through who I think the Edmonton Oilers top five rivals are in the NHL right now, after the question was posed in a very interesting way on Twitter by my good friend Waz. And plus, finally, on today's episode, we are going to finish off with where I think the Pacific Division will finish at the end of the season. All that and much more on today's episode of Locked On Oilers. Thank you so much for making Locked On Oilers your first listen every day. We are free and available wherever you find your podcasts. Alrighty, we are going to start off with the salary cap situation as we're starting to get a little closer to the start of the season. Spring training, it's the summer. Training camp is what I meant to say, is coming up in about a month less than. We are on the countdown until the first game of the season. I think we're on Kyler Yamamoto amount of days, either that or Igor Ulanov amount of days. Shout out Igor Ulanov. Either 56 or 55 days left until the start of the season, so we're really starting to get closer to the season, and the Edmonton Oilers still have some salary cap to deal with. They are a little bit over the cap space right now. They still need to re-sign Ryan McLeod. It's sounding like, thank you to Tom Gazzola, if you follow him on Twitter, it's sounding like that may be the deal, but it sounds like Sam Gagné might actually be making his way back to Edmonton, whether that's on a professional tryout or on a league minimum contract. Either way, the Edmonton Oilers would still need to clear some sort of cap space. How are they going to do it? Well, there's the three candidates that we've talked about over the last couple of weeks, really, with Jesse Puljujärvi, Tyson Barrie, and Warren Fogle. Well, I'm here to kind of reignite that conversation because I'm going to tell you what I think the Edmonton Oilers could do in order to both re-sign Ryan McLeod and to bring in Sam Gagné. I almost said Zach Hyman, but I meant Sam Gagné, which means win in French, if you didn't know, if you live under a rock, or you're taking French classes for the first time, you never know. Either way, yes, Puljujärvi signed his one-year, $3 million deal, and a lot of people sat there and went, oh, okay, that's a decent deal, but that's probably going to be a sign-and-trade. Well, we're about 3 weeks after that sign, and there's still been no trade. So if it was a sign and trade, then that deal would have already gone through, unless it's something massive. I saw, like, YouTube videos going, there's something in the works, this big three-way deal. And then the thumbnail had, like, Jacob Chychrun, Matt Barzal, and Nazem Kadri. You're going, like, what? And as well, Jesse Puljujärvi. You're like, okay, one of these things is not like the other. That's Jesse Puljujärvi. It wouldn't make a lot of sense. So, I think the Edmonton Oilers are going to actually hold on to Jesse Puljujärvi. Thank goodness. I am a Jesse Puljujärvi stan through and through. So, that really leaves Tyson Barrie and Warren Fogle. Well, if you listened to my episode yesterday, I explained just how important Tyson Barrie is to this team. One of the highest scoring defensemen in the entire NHL over the last couple of years. The Edmonton Oilers have lost Duncan Keith, who is a very solid puck-moving defenseman. Now, other than Duncan Keith, the Edmonton Oilers also lost Chris Russell. Chris Russell also is still a free agent. The Edmonton Oilers' most tenured, longest tenured player in the NHL right now is Tyson Barrie. Edmonton Oilers need Tyson Barry in their lineup right now. They do. A fantastic puck mover, which they're losing with Duncan Keith not being there. He really, really honed in on his defensive skills over the stretch, and especially in the playoffs for the Edmonton Oilers. Ever since Dave Manson came in and really started working with that defensive core, Tyson Barry has really started to get it. On top of Tyson Barry, Cody Ceci has also started to get it. Now you have young guys, coming into the lineup for the Edmonton Oilers. And now have to have somebody to look up to. Well, the Edmonton Oilers don't have Duncan Keith, as mentioned. Tyson Barry's going to have to be that guy. Evan Bouchard's coming into his second full season, third technically pro season in the NHL. Philip Broberg is going to be an important part of the Edmonton Oilers, but really his first full season in the NHL, second as a pro. There's rumors on Vincent Desharnais, a seventh round pick in 2016, making the team, the Edmonton Oilers. Not exactly compiled with a whole bunch of experience. Markus Niemelainen as well probably will be up and down with the team. Slater Cuckoo. You don't really have a lot of space to move Tyson Barry and have a comfortable defensive core. Yes, he has a $4.5 million cap hit, and that's an easily movable piece for how good Tyson Barry is. But that's the thing, how good Tyson Barry actually is. And the Edmonton Oilers need Tyson Barry. So that leaves Warren Fogle at a $2.75 million cap hit. I've mentioned before that I think if the Edmonton Oilers do move Warren Fogle, it would be too bad because Warren Fogle has grown a fantastic relationship with Kyler Yamamoto, Evan Bouchard, and Ryan McLeod. And that's the thing. Is off-ice relationships mean just as much as on-ice relationships? Because off the ice, if you guys are friends, if you guys are going out to dinners together, you're having family dinners together, you're meeting each other's families, you're going for drinks together, you're going golfing, whatever. Spending your extra time off the ice with those people, then when you are on the ice, you're going to be working hard, working your best to try and win at any cost. For those guys, not only for the crest on the front, but for the guys that you are on the ice with, because you actually care about those people. But Warren Fogle hasn't been producing at a $2.75 million clip. Now, I'm sure you can make the argument for Jesse Puljujärvi as well, but there's a little bit of a difference there. Jesse Puljujärvi has a little bit more of a pedigree than Warren Fogle does. That's what you're signing Jesse Puljujärvi for. Warren Fogle has issues with finishing, has his entire career. That's been his knock. And ever since he came to the Edmonton Oilers, everyone always said he's going to figure it out. He's going to get out of this finishing spell. Well, he didn't. And now the Edmonton Oilers are tied to him for another, I think, 2 years, if not 3 years, for $2.75 million per year. And the Edmonton Oilers don't have space for him. You have a first line of Evander Kane, Connor McDavid, and Kyler Yamamoto. You're not putting him there. You have a second line of Zach Hyman, Leon Draisaitl, and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. You're not going to put him there. You have a third line of Dylan Holloway, Ryan McLeod, and Jesse Puljujärvi. You could make the argument that you could put Fogle at the third line spot, or third left wing line spot, I guess, where Dylan Holloway is. But at the same time, you're thinking of the prospect of having Dylan Holloway, Ryan McLeod, and Jesse Puljujärvi as a third line. That's exciting. I don't care who you think either any of those players are. That is an exciting line. And if you don't think that's an exciting line, you need to get checked out because you probably don't have a lot of blood pumping through your body. And then the fourth line, Matthias Janmark. And if these rumors are true of Sam Gagner coming in, you're not really going to put a $2.75 million guy on the fourth line, unless your name is Zach Cassian. But either way, the Edmonton Oilers don't have that cap space. And the Edmonton Oilers would, I'm almost 100% sure, would rather have an 11-7 lineup with Matthias Janmark and Sam Gagner going than a 12-6 lineup with a Fogle without Gagner and Devin Shore. Or Derek Ryan. Pick your guy. That's why Warren Fogel is my guy leaving. That would clear up $2.75 million in cap space. That would also allow the Edmonton Oilers to sign Ryan McLeod to about a two-year... I think he's going to get about of somewhere between $1 million and $1.5 million. His last contract was a rookie contract, so he isn't going to be making over $2 million, I don't think. So I think a $1 million deal will make sense. Anywhere between $1 million and $1.5 million for Ryan McLeod, and then you can bring in Sam Gagner on a league minimum and be just fine. I like the Edmonton Oilers defense, unless they lose Tyson Barrie, then it's a little bit, but I don't think a lot of people really give the Edmonton Oilers defense a lot of credit. So I think the Edmonton Oilers do move on from Warren Fogel to clear up that cap space, to re-sign Ryan McLeod, to bring in Sam Gagner once again. Oh, that's exciting. Oh, I'm getting the jitters. But either way, that is what I think the Edmonton Oilers will do when it comes to their cap situation. Goodbye, Warren Fogel. I've appreciated you and what you've done for this team. And you've brought some nice highlights to us so far. In a little bit, I'm going to talk to you about the Edmonton Oilers rivals. There's a very interesting question came up on Twitter and I want to talk about it. But first, I have a very important message from the NHTSA. You're hanging out with some friends and putting back a few drinks. A few becomes a few too many. As the evening comes to an end and people start to head out, you start thinking of calling for a ride. Nah, you live nearby and you can make it home all right. That's all right, no big deal. What are the odds you're going to get pulled over anyways? And even so, what's the worst that can happen? Your insurance goes up, you lose your license, you lose your job, you total your car? Kill someone? Everyone knows about the risks of driving drunk. The results are tragic and often deadly. However, that still doesn't stop everyone from getting behind the wheel while under the influence. That's why police officers are out there right now looking for impaired drivers on our roads to save lives. So if you think you're okay to drive after a few drinks, think again. Play it safe and plan ahead to get a ride. It only takes one mistake to change your life or someone else's forever. Drive sober or get pulled over. Alrighty, we are going to move on to the Edmonton Oilers' five biggest rivals, as I did mention. A good buddy of mine, Matthew Wozniak, on Twitter, did reach out on Twitter and say, hey, everybody, who do you think the Edmonton Oilers' top five rivals are? Obviously, the Calgary Flames are the number one rivals, so there's one of them. Let's just get that out of there. But there are a lot of very interesting names that were thrown in there after the question. So here are my top five rivals for the Edmonton Oilers. That also includes Calgary, so basically top four for the Edmonton Oilers. I'll give a little bit of an argument for each one, but other than that, I want to hear you. Who do you think the Edmonton Oilers' biggest rivals are in the NHL right now? So obviously, as mentioned, I'm going to start off with the Calgary Flames. It's the Battle of Alberta. The Edmonton Oilers won the last Battle of Alberta, so is it really a rivalry? But either way, yes, the Calgary Flames, number one, don't need to go into that. The second name I have, or the second team I have for the Edmonton Oilers, are the Winnipeg Jets. I don't think a lot of people in Edmonton like the Winnipeg Jets, especially of the older generation who got to see the really good Winnipeg Jets play against the really good Edmonton Oilers and have those playoff battles and have those battles within the conference and really had a very, not fun rivalry, I guess, but it was nice to have, other than Calgary, I should say, a kind of close rival for the Edmonton Oilers, a very good team. And now with the Winnipeg Jets, I mean, they didn't have a very good season last season, but when the Edmonton Oilers played the Winnipeg Jets in the playoffs a couple years ago, it was anarchy. Not a lot of people liked this series, and still people have a sour taste in their mouths after that series because everybody wanted to beat Winnipeg, and then the Oilers got swept. And that hurts to say right now. Winnipeg, I'll be honest, I went there a couple days ago. It's almost like Edmonton's baby brother. It's not a lot different than Edmonton. I think Winnipeg wants to be like Edmonton, and I think the Jets want to be like the Oilers, but they can't. Either way, I have the Winnipeg Jets as one of the Edmonton Oilers' top five rivals. The third name I have, or the second really name that I have, not named Calgary, is the Vancouver Canucks. You're starting to understand the geographic feel. I mean, these are the teams that are closest to Edmonton and are kind of going, oh, we're Canada's team. No, we're Canada's team. Hi, we're Vancouver. You know, that type of thing. So I have Vancouver as the third biggest rival. I think Edmonton also wishes it was Vancouver. Just the city of Edmonton wishes it was Vancouver as well. You go to Vancouver and not a lot of people like Edmonton. They kind of see us as kind of the spoiled older brother type deal, where we've kind of had everything that we wanted, especially early on in our hockey lives, and now they're just going, oh, we want what they have. But again, the other thing with the Vancouver Canucks that I get is the Edmonton Oilers always play Vancouver early in the season, and sometimes, or it seemed like that the Vancouver Canucks just always had their numbers, especially too in the early 2000s, well, since the 2000s up until, what, 2018? When the Vancouver Canucks had the Sedin brothers, everybody in Edmonton hated the Sedin brothers. There were, that team too, Matthias Olin was a fun name, Sammy Salo, Kevin Bieksa, Alexander Burrows. That was, I mean, yeah, a pretty decent team down there. Obviously, Roberto Luongo, Corey Schneider. I personally, growing up, I was a big Dan Cloutier guy. Now I'm giving them a little bit too much props. But either way, they had some very good teams. And speaking of Sam Gagne, as mentioned on yesterday's episode, Zach Cassian fractured Sam Gagne's jaw, in a slash attempt when Cassian was with the Vancouver Canucks, and I never got over that, because Sam Gagne was going to be the Edmonton Oilers captain, and ever since then, that was when things went downhill with Gagne and the Oilers. But either way, Vancouver Canucks is the third team on this list. The fourth team, these are where we get a little bit debatable, all right? The fourth team I have on here, maybe not debatable for this one, but this one. Now, I would honestly almost put this over Vancouver, but just in regards to geographic location and Vancouver being Canadian, Edmonton being Canadian, I have them there. But the Edmonton Oilers have had a few more recent scuffles with this team. And that's the Anaheim Ducks. Oh, we all know the Edmonton Oilers won that Western Conference semifinal against the Anaheim Ducks. The Edmonton Oilers won 6 of those 7 games against the Anaheim Ducks in 2017. I'll say it. The only game that they actually did lose was the one where they got absolutely hammered in Game 3. And then the Edmonton Oilers almost made a comeback, which includes that Connor McDavid beautiful cutback goal and snipes it on John Gibson. But I will never, ever, ever forgive Corey Perry, Kevin Bieksa, or Ryan Getzlaff for any of that. He pulled Cam Talbot's pad. We all know it. We all saw it. That's not a goal. That's goalie interference. The Edmonton Oilers should have moved on to the next round right there. But no. Of course not. It's Anaheim. It's Disneyland. That's where Disney is. Everyone wants Anaheim to move through. Nobody wants a young Connor McDavid to move on to the next part of the playoffs. No one wanted to see that back then. Sorry, Anaheim, you honestly might go above Winnipeg. I can't stand Anaheim. I like their colors. I like Trevor Zegras. I like Mason McTavish. Other than that, meh. Jamie Drysdale's decent. John Gibson, but I'm still mad at Anaheim, man. I'm still mad at them every single time I think about it. And finally, the last name I have on here, and this one's a little interesting, but I think it's a new one that's kind of brewing. Yeah, well, maybe not new one, because, well, the Edmonton Oilers did send Wayne Gretzky to this team a very long time ago. I don't want to talk about it. But the Edmonton Oilers and the Los Angeles Kings had quite the series in the playoffs this year, to the point where a lot of, like, I was a little bit of an LA Kings fan growing up because I have family in Los Angeles. The Dodgers are my favorite baseball team. The Clippers are my favorite basketball team. Los Angeles is basically my second home. But I can't stand the Kings. I just can't. There's something about them, something about their fans, too. They cheer at everything, man. I went to a Kings game a couple years ago, and they were cheering off sides, icing, shots on goal. You're going, what are you cheering about? Me and my friend Darren just looked at each other, and we're like, what is happening here? She was rattled. We didn't know what was going on, but LA Kings, just everything about the LA Kings, especially recently, they're this new, young, tough team playing against these guys. I can't stand Brandon Lemieux. I can't stand, oh, what was his name? Mikey Anderson. If you're an adult going by Mikey, oh, get out of here. That's what you're going by, Mikey Anderson? And by the way, he slew-footed Leon Draisaitl, so for the rest of the playoffs, he only had one leg. Oh, and by the way, Leon Draisaitl finished second in points with only one leg. So way to go, Mikey. You just ignited the fire. Oh, and ignited mine too. Either way, Los Angeles Kings are the Edmonton Oilers, one of the Edmonton Oilers' new rivals. And in whatever it's called, in summary, I am fired up. In summary, the five Edmonton Oilers rivals that I have, the Calgary Flames, the Winnipeg Jets, the Vancouver Canucks, the Anaheim Ducks, and Los Angeles Kings. What do you think? Is that, am I out to lunch here a little bit? Am I just creating rivalries to create rivalries? Am I getting mad for no reason? I normally do. But either way, let me know who you think your five rivals are for the Edmonton Oilers. And I'll let Waz know what you think, and I'm sure he'll make an Oilers Nation post about it. But either way, let's move on to the Pacific Division rankings. We're going from the rivals in general to the division rivals and where I think the Pacific Division will finish for the start of next year. I'm sure we are going to come back to this at some point, but this is my mid-summer rankings for next season. But either way, before we get into that, I want to tell you about our partners over at BetOnline. BetOnline.net is the fastest and easiest way to check in on all your betting needs. Find all your favorite sports and events at the number one online source for odds, lines, and games. Find reviews and news of every league, including Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, and even golf. They have golf on there too. BetOnline continues to be the top online resource for all your sports wagering information. From live in-game betting, scores, and podcasts, they have you covered. Head to BetOnline today or use the mobile device to learn more about the trends and action happening today. BetOnline, where the game starts. Also, I wonder if they have like live golf or if it's PGA or if you're allowed to bet online. I don't even know. I don't know about golf too much, but that was just a question I came up. If you do know, let me know. Either way, let's move on to where I think this is our mid-summer Pacific Division rankings. I think we all know where this is going, but we're going to start from 8 and come all the way up to 1 where the Edmonton Oilers are. Ooh, spoiler alert. But either way, we're going to come through, talk about where I think each team is going to finish within the division at the end of the year, and then also what I think or how I think their offseason went. So at number 8, I have the San Jose Sharks. Now, on Friday, we will have an episode coming out with the San Jose Sharks host, with JD over there at the Sharks, Locked On Sharks. And, well, I tried to give them a little more credit, and that didn't go too well. I tried to put the Kraken over, or the Sharks over the Kraken, and like they said over there, it was just, the Sharks suck. So I'm gonna have to take their word for it over at Locked On Sharks, and I'm giving the San Jose Sharks an 8 spot. In 7th, I have the Seattle Kraken. Now, again, I wanted to put them 8th. I just didn't see a lot of movement from them. Not exactly fun or movement that makes you think, ooh, this team's actually serious about it. Obviously, they got Shane Wright in the draft, and I think in the future, a 1-2 punch of Matty Beniers and Shane Wright is going to be deadly. But that is not this year. That it's a future move, and I think the Seattle Kraken is still going to suck this year. But they'll still be fun to watch either way. Moving on to number six, I have the other most recent expansion team. That is the Vegas Golden Knights. They just lost Robin Lehner in after basically the goalie market went ice cold. They lost out on Darcy Kemper, Jack Campbell, Grubauer. Well, Grubauer, I guess, was, or excuse me. I'm talking about the Golden Knights. There's still a lot of other goaltenders that could have been available had they have known Robin Lehner was going to go down. But right now, the goaltenders for the Vegas Golden Knights are Logan Thompson and Laurent Brossoit. They also have had cap issues. Defense isn't fantastic. They don't have a lot of scoring. They traded Max Pacioretty, who is honestly the only saving grace for me on that team. And now they have Jack Eichel, who's sitting there going, huh, I might be in a worse situation than when I was in Buffalo. So way to go, Jack. Good for you, buddy. You forced your way out just to go to Vegas. Hey, at least it's nice in Vegas. The Vegas Golden Knights, I have them at sixth in the division again. There's just too many losses, not enough additions. Top end additions, I should say, that makes me excited for the Golden Knights. And I think every other team has gotten better than the Golden Knights. So at number five, I have the Anaheim Ducks, who I think they're going to have Mason McTavish in the lineup. They just signed John Klingberg. They also have John Gibson in net. Now, I know Klingberg's on a $7 million deal. I still like the forward group of the Anaheim Ducks. I like the fact that John Klingberg and Jamie Drysdale are going to be down there as well. I kind of dig the Anaheim Ducks. We'll see if they can add another piece. Nazem Kadri is still available. I'm not saying that that's a name that they will go after, but that would be a very interesting ad there. I think Anaheim might, especially in the future, start making runs once again. I don't think it'll be this year, but I do think they will be fun to watch. So I have the Anaheim Ducks at number five. At number four, I have a team who was very bad last year, but made some very exciting signings, and that is the Vancouver Canucks. They brought in Ilya Mikheyev, which is a fantastic ad. A little bit too much for me, but the thing with free agencies, you're going to either have to overpay on term or overpay on money. So they did just that. They got their guy. I love Ilya Mikheyev. Great penalty killer. Very solid skater. And can score as well. So it'll be interesting to see how he does along with Evgeny Kuzmenko. Yes, Andre Kuzmenko, Evgeny Kuzmenko. Where did I get that name from? Andre Kuzmenko, one of my guys that I wanted the Oilers to take a swing at. Not that I'm not happy that the Edmonton Oilers did, but I think they're in a pretty decent situation still. But Andre Kuzmenko is going to have, I think, a very solid year in Vancouver. He already seems quite settled in Vancouver. He seems to like the city. And that's good for any new player or European player, really, coming into Canada or the States and the NHL. In general, if they feel comfortable with the city they're in, hopefully they can do well. And I hope Kuzmenko can figure it out. I like Kuzmenko. I think he's a good skater, good shot. He's going to be very important on the power play for the Vancouver Canucks. So I think that'll be a very interesting team over there in Vancouver. Now, this is where we get the top three spots, the playoff spots in the Pacific Division. And the first playoff spot, I have the Los Angeles Kings. Yes, the Kings once again make the playoffs. I think they're an exciting young team. They have some very exciting additions as well coming into the team. Jonathan Quick, probably one of his last years, if not his last year in the NHL. So it probably will be a little bit of a platoon between Quick and Cal Peterson. But the thing about the LA Kings too is, and the reason why I have them at number two and not number three, is because they're still young. They're still going to make mistakes. They're still going to fall into a couple of lulls in within the season and try and build themselves back up. Whether that's early in the season, whether that's late in the season, I think they are going to have some trouble at some point, but I think they'll be able to pull themselves out of it. Either that, or they will be able to have pulled or made such a big step early in the season that if they were to kind of start to taper off at the end of the season, then maybe they would still be able to salvage the season. But either way, I have the LA Kings at number three. And number two, unfortunately, I do have the Calgary Flames. Daryl Sutter's just too good of a coach. Jonathan Huberdeau is a fantastic hockey player. Mackenzie Weegar adds to an already fantastic defensive core for the Calgary Flames. This falls on the LA Kings as well. I think at some point, as mentioned, they will have their experience will kind of hinder them a little bit, or inexperience is probably the better way of putting it. And I think Daryl Sutter will find a way to kind of push that Calgary Flames team a little harder next year. They're going to have guys like Jakob Peltier joining the team as well. Going to get kind of younger as well, so it'll be an interesting Calgary Flames team. But still not better than the team number one, the Edmonton Oilers. Baby! Yes, I have the Edmonton Oilers winning the Pacific Division. How nice does that feel? Fantastic. I have the Edmonton Oilers winning the Stanley Cup. Why not? Who's going to stop us? Either way, we are going to call it there. How do you think I did with the Pacific Division rankings? Where would you put the Pacific Division? Who do you think the Edmonton Oilers' top five rivals are? Let me know in the comments below. You can tweet me as well at the Locked On Oilers Twitter, at Locked On Oilers, or you can find me personally at The Real Holden 40. Either way, we're going to call it there. No episode tomorrow, but we will have an episode with the San Jose Sharks on Friday. So we will have that coming up on Friday. And then once again, next week, we will go down to Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I hope you have a wonderful day. I hope you have a wonderful Thursday. We shall see you Friday. Stay safe and play La Bamba, baby.